to entertain them with stories of my army days. Now that I was married, they'd extended that invitation to my wife as well. The Derwents were a family of innocence, looking upon the world with benevolence, never noticing its darkness. Travers had a bit more cynicism in him, but I imagine he enjoyed their unworldly companionship as much as I did. "Well met, Captain," Travers said. "I'm pleased to have been walking along this same stretch of pavement. I've been meaning to call on you."
"Have you? What can I do for you, Mr. Travers?"
I liked Gareth, who seemed intelligent and sensible, though I did not know much about him. He hesitated. "There is a tavern not far from here. Perhaps—"
"Of course," I said politely. "A chance to stop for a good pint would delay me further from returning home.
Donato would hold a soiree tonight, and the house was currently in an uproar preparing for it. My role would be to stand with her at the top of the stairs and shake hands with the crush that shoved their way toward us. A friendly ale at a pub was just the thing to fortify me for the task. We walked along the Strand toward Charing Cross, Travers leading me to whatever tavern he had in mind. As we neared St. Martin's Lane, a strange roar rippled through the spring air. The sound grew and built, flowing down the street to us like a sudden river. A cart horse shied, hooves clattering on the cobbles while the driver tried to calm it. Travers stopped, as worried as the horse.
"A mob?" he asked, his young face drawn in concern.
I sincerely hoped not. Riots at times tore through these streets, mobs crushing, breaking, beating anything in their way. I could not blame those who protested the cost of bread, which seemed to rise out of all proportion to anything sensible. In these times after the war, so many had returned from the army to no work and no wages, cast upon the shores of their native land without recompense. Add to that the cost of grain and men unable to feed their families, and anger built to the breaking point. Houses and shops were demolished during the violent rioting, with soldiers called to fire into the crowds and restore peace. A strained peace, with desperation boiling just below the surface. If a mob came this way, we'd have to take refuge in a shop or house. I could not outrun a riot on my injured leg, though I had little doubt that Travers, young and healthy, could sprint to safety. After listening a moment, I said in relief, "I do not think so." The crowd was excited, but missing the sharpness of fury. "Someone in the stocks, possibly." Travers relaxed a bit, but only a bit.
"Poor bastard."
I agreed. The stocks were for those convicted of crimes of a lesser degree than murder, robbery, and other heinous things. While the convicted might not be hanged, he could lose his life if the mob grew incensed enough. If the person had the crowd's sympathy, he would fare little worse than stiff limbs from the ordeal. But if the crowd despised him or her, the man or woman could be battered to death. It became clear as we neared Charing Cross that the fellow in the stocks today did not have the crowd's sympathy. The unfortunate man was already covered in filth from rotted vegetables and dung. His head hung down and he shuddered when another missile burst upon his back. My pity for him stirred. I could not get close enough to read the placard that proclaimed his crime. The crowd was chanting, but it was difficult to hear what they said. I turned to a coffee vendor, who decided this was a good place for business today.
"What has he done?" I asked.
The vendor looked pointedly at the rather dented bulbous silver coffee urn in front of him. So I politely handed him a coin and bought a cup. He took a cracked mug from his cart, turned the spigot to release thick steaming coffee into it, and handed it to me. I took a sip and tried not to make a face. I was going soft, being served the finest brew at Lady Breckenridge's table every day. Then again, my former landlady had made coffee better than this in her little back street bake shop.
"Buggery,"
the vendor grunted.
"So they say."
"Ah." While a hanging offence, sodomy had to be proved with a witness. Gentlemen who engaged in the practice usually were wise enough to make certain they were completely private. But a charge of unnatural behaviour could be made and tried. Conviction meant a day in the stocks, at the mercy of the mob.
"Poor bastard indeed," I said.
"Ill lost."
The vendor, a large bull of a man, showed no compassion.
"Resilient. He'll be happily poking away at some other bloke in a week or so."
I had no wish to stand and watch the man confined by his hands and feet be kicked in the backside by youths who found this good fun. So I finished a few more sips of coffee, handed the mug back, and signalled Travers to lead me on to his tavern. The public house was